This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
IGN GameScoop. Anyway, we can all agree that the blue shell is complete horse.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining this week is Justin Davis, Brian Altano, and Sam Claiborne.
We are the Omega Cops.
What's that? What?
Where'd you pull that out from?
That's GameScoop, and it's an anagram.
No way.
Yeah, oh, really?
GameScoop is Omega Cops?
That rules.
Or the Camp Goose.
Oh, that's probably not Omega Cops.
Want to stick with Omega Cops?
Yeah, let's go with that
All right, I have some more later. Okay. It's going to be a real scoop gem.
It's not real. That's I love anagrams. Okay. That's so fun. That's right. Really good. That's
Omega Cops is the winner.
Omega Cops is the name of this show in other territories.
You can put the exclamation point wherever you want.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be Omega Cops.
It's the bootleg version you can get down in Chinatown.
Yeah.
We've got a great show for you this week. We got to talk about the Assassin's Creed, the latest Assassin's Creed leak. We're going to talk about the modern gamer, what they look like, smell like, feel like.
Ooh,
but first,
tastes like.
Not too long ago, on this very show, I posed the question, in the wake of the Mass Effect Andromeda debacle, is this the end of Mass Effect?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And if reports today are to be believed, it is the end, at least for now. Mm-hmm. Kotaku has a story today, reports saying that the Mass Effect series has been put on hold.
Yeah.
And we got a statement from EA that did not refute that news. Mm-hmm. Did not write confirm it, but they did say, you know, BioWare Montreal, studio behind Andromeda, has been put on some other projects and lots more good things to come from BioWare in the future.
Yeah, when they don't outright contradict something, that means they're confirming it and trying to spin it. And it's just, it's a very common response we get.
They also announced that Montreal, which was a support studio for BioWare and Andromeda, like that's the part that I think people miss. Like BioWare made this game. But like BioWare is completely different teams in like different countries, like Montreal versus Austin. And Montreal, the team that made Andromeda, this was their first game that they led on their own. They'd been a support studio working on multiplayer and like other features and functions of previous Mass Effect games. And this was their chance to sort of really make it. And there were rumors that they're like fighting between like this new team within BioWare had taken over a franchise that a different team started and that there was some friction there.
And now they're being moved back onto more of a support role.
They're moving back to a support role, correct.
So it's like, I mean, critically, the game did pretty well, right?
It got sevens.
It seems
like a seven,
which is okay. Yeah, it's getting better.
With updates post,
I hope it's getting better.
Well, I mean, they're
waiting till it's the final version to play.
They're slowly patching.
But I think the main issue was that sales-wise, I don't think it's going to be nearly as long-tail as some of the other games are. And I think that it sort of happenstance dropped in an era of the year where it was incredibly crowded.
Well, that game is a 7, and you're going up against Zelda and Horizon Zero Dawn and Persona 5 and Nier.
And that was the thing. I was playing all those games, and to pull me away from any of those things or all of those things, I needed something to be like substantially new and wonderful and great, and for this to sort of be like as they do with a lot of like sort of series soft reboots or whatever this was, they had to kind of nail the idea that this should be the Mass Effect game that I've been missing or that I didn't get into last time. And you know, it was hard to pull me away from Zelda and Horizon for that.
I remember thinking about the spring and thinking, man, all those games are gonna have to get out of the way of Mass Effect.
It's tough. It's not too surprising for me because there's been 4 Mass Effect games, and half of them have been mired in controversy.
Yeah,
there's only been 2 that were like really like 2 thumbs up, very well received.
1 and 2, to clarify.
Yeah. And I mean, Sam, to be fair, like when you were having those conversations, like we hadn't seen more than 5 minutes of Horizon. Yep. We thought that Zelda was going to be Skyward Sword 2, or we didn't really know what that's, you know, that was, that game had gotten delayed so many times. Both of those games turned out to be phenomenal.
And no one played the first Nier.
No.
Wow, this game is awesome.
Which, and that game went on to sell 1 million units, so it's like, it's fascinating to me. But I mean, sometimes something comes back for a little bit and it's okay, and then it goes away. It was like, I grew up watching Beavis and Butthead, and they brought that show back, and like, it was different, but it was still kind of the same, and I liked it, and then they didn't renew it, and that was the end of Beavis and Butthead. And that's kind of where I feel Mass Effect is right now. Like, they brought it back with a new team, they gave it a shot, it didn't do what it was supposed to do, and now they can...
making a Beavis and Butthead game.
I would love that. I wish BioWare did it.
Mm-hmm. I'd actually rather see BioWare's them. Beavis and Butthead?
I don't expect...
They made a Sonic game.
It did make a
Sonic dialogue's pretty easy.
I don't expect Mass Effect to be gone forever, for even for very long. I think there's some studio dynamics at play. You know, Mass Effect, or the BioWare team, they've been open about how they're working on a new IP. They're working on a new brand, something new. And so you can't just, like EA knows that they want to keep Mass Effect going, but what are you supposed to do? Like, cancel this other project that's been in the works for years? Like, they just have to wait, but they don't trust that Montreal team to work on it anymore based off this Kotaku report.
Yeah.
And so I think they just did the calculus of, well, we don't want Montreal making another Mass Effect, so they need to wait for, you know, maybe that core BioWare team to free up. Maybe they'll do like an Elder Scrolls thing and alternate between, you know, this brand and Mass Effect or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because if you look at EA's output over the last year, which has been really strong, their sports stuff sells really well. Battlefield 1 did really well. Mm-hmm. But then you look at something like Titanfall and Mass Effect, and they have to be looking at both of those franchise being like, these are huge things. They announced basically that they have long tail plans for Titanfall, but like, what do you do with those?
But then
Sam's just staring at
Anna. Tell you what you do with them. You sack them, Goop.
It's good.
There's only one that has space in it. I was going to use space for this. But
you sack them, Goop.
Sack them, Goop.
All right. That's what space. You do.
Game Cop, so.
Or you could have, So, Game Cop.
Good work, Damon. You made up your own anagram.
Yeah.
That's not easy.
I feel like Mass Effect...
I am an anagram generator.
I made up over 400 of them.
Mass Effect got 7s, which is not good enough for that franchise.
Yeah.
But it's still good, right? Like,
sure.
Like, on the literal word, it's like it's good. So, I think that's a game that a lot of people... I feel like we are 3 months away from people being like, I got Mass Effect Andromeda and I really liked it. Like, you're gonna start seeing those topics on message boards all over the place.
Yeah.
Especially as like the really bad like crab walking animations and stuff get fixed. Like, they're really easy to make fun of stuff. Like,
that
it won't fix like the bigger problems with the game, but
that whole story around it was fascinating too, and the fact that like fans were jumping in and fixing the animations before the devs could. Like, it was just a weird time, you know, for everything. I mean, again, I think a lot of that came with the fact that there was such scrutiny on that franchise. I think that like when Fallout 4 came out and it had a bunch of wonky shit in it, people were like, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of got a free pass for it. But with Mass Effect, people had the magnifying lens out for that thing. They had their blades out ready to cut that thing up.
Do you think there'll still be these meaty DLC packs that series is famous for?
I mean, I forget what their business model was, but did they, I'm not in the know on this, but did they sell like a season pass around this with,
I don't know.
with promised content. So
there's no way to know.
I didn't play. I don't know if the story. I don't know how the story. If there's room in the story for story DLC, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a game that I'm looking forward to playing at some point. Like it's like going to be like a Christmas break game for me, maybe.
There's no way to know. It's one of my favorite Damonisms.
So you're actually
I think Justin started saying that. I got to give credit to Justin.
Yeah, you're actually going to try to get to this game at some point this year.
Probably.
Interesting. That's cool. I mean, I'm sure it'll be.
If it's anything like The Witcher, 3 years from now, I'll really want to talk about it a lot on GameScoop.
Decog Mop.
When people are nostalgic for 2017. Now, it's a little sad to see what's happened to this franchise, because when I started in this industry 11 years ago and I went to my first E3 for IGN, Mass Effect was one of those great hopes, the promises of the next generation that was just getting started, along with stuff like BioShock and Assassin's Creed. When those are like the behind closed doors demos we saw at E3 2006, when everyone was like, Oh my God, this next generation is going to be awesome.
You also have to remember.
It was.
How many next gen games at the time were sort of like 3D open world ish with action elements and tons of RPG stuff, right?
Yeah.
Few and far between, or at least a few here and there. Now it's every game has RPG stuff in it. So it's good. You have to, like, when you want that fix, like, there are so many other opportunities to jump in on that, especially, you know, coming up between Horizon and Zelda, which had RPG ish elements, you know, to an extent.
All right, moving on. The Nielsen organization, the same company you may have heard, used to provide your TV ratings. What were the most popular TV shows?
You were in Nielsen house once.
What?
Are you really?
Or you mean in the actual house or?
Yeah, they used to. I mean, now I think Nielsen sends a box to people that actually just captures what you're watching, like an electronic box. But we logged. You wrote down what you watched and sent it back to them.
Based on the honor system.
Wait, really?
The honor system.
Yeah,
I've never heard of that. That's
we watched
insane.
PBS all night,
and then you had to write down like, were you like actively watching, or did you just like have it on while you were making dinner or whatever? Like anytime the television.
I don't think you could do something like that in the binge watching era, like to actually tell someone like, oh, I watched like 13 episodes of a TV show on Netflix today.
It's a completely flawed system. I'm sure it was all made up.
Yep. Well, they've provided their annual 360 Gamer Report. They do this every year where they survey a bunch of gamers, and here's their methodology. They surveyed 2,000 people, 13 and over, a split 50-50 split between male and female in the U.S. And, you know, it's a general population survey, but they asked people about whether or not they were gamers and whether they played games and whatnot. So that's what we're dealing with here. And some of these stats are interesting and some are eyebrow. Some of them I raise an eyebrow at.
Gasp! I can't.
And this one. And this one.
I can't raise one eyebrow.
I can raise
both them both.
Eyebrows independently.
I can do one.
I think you guys are all raising one eyebrow pretty effectively.
This is just my face. I'm just sitting here.
Frozen.
First of all, now, Nielsen finds that 64% of the U.S. population, 13 and over, are gamers.
Yeah.
Nielsen considers, and so I think they're saying, like, if someone claims to play, you know, mobile games, you're a gamer. You get the title of gamer.
Fair enough.
So
I'm into that.
And what's the percentage?
64%.
Nintendo 64%.
Mm-hmm. Nintendo 64%. Does that sound high, low, right about, just about
low.
Right? Low. You think more, you would have thought more than 64% of the 13 and over population in the U.S. plays games?
Yes.
Well, see, that's what it's interesting that, you know, IGN has done studies before where we survey gamers, and it's like, you ask a question, are you a gamer? No. Do you, you know, ever play any video games? And they're like, yeah, you know, I play with my family sometimes, and I play, you know, 5 hours a week on my phone on the bus and stuff. And it's like, dude, you just said you weren't a gamer.
People don't accurately
self-identify.
Because gamer is a crappy label. Yeah. Like, it's like being called an eater or a movie watcher.
Well, exactly.
They're not saying, they're not asking people if they think they're gamers.
Right.
They're classifying them as gamers
based off their activity.
So wait, you said the number's low?
Well, I think so, because like I think the number of people with phones, for instance, is very high, and I can't imagine people with phones now really never using
play
them.
A game.
Well, I think there's like, first of all, like the barrier to entry for something like this is a sort of prohibitively expensive to most people. Like to have a smartphone or a phone capable enough to play a video game and also be 13, like I don't have a 13-year-old kid, but if I did, I would be like, you don't really get a phone yet. Maybe I'd be like, you get something else. But I think that it's like a video game system's expensive, a phone's expensive. It's not like, you know, just like something pen and paper or something tangible, something you can find, something like a book. Like I'm sure 100% of people have read a book, but
like a crossword puzzle is a good example.
13-year-olds love a good crossword puzzle.
Everybody loves a great crossword for 13 and under, I'd say.
Yeah.
what the kids are really into.
Mm-hmm. Cracking open that New York Times. Do your crosswords Sunday morning with
your fidget spinner.
Nice hot pot of coffee.
Nielsen finds that the largest group of gamers, 46%, only play on one device, whether that be a console or their PC or their mobile phone. They only do their gaming on one thing.
You know what we call them? They're called fanboys.
Yeah, those mobile.
No, there's a lot of
phone.
Did I tell you about the Uber I took? He knew this never happens to me because GameScoop's the only show that I'm on. It happens to you two more often. He knew he was an IGN fan, and so we were just talking, and he's just a PlayStation guy, pretty casual gamer, Call of Duty sports games, and he a new PlayStation comes out, he buys it and gets PlayStation games, and that's like his video game life. And I think there's like millions of like. Quiet,
yeah.
Like out of the 40 million or however many PlayStation sold, that's like half of them. They're like not the crazy people that are, in the comments on message boards, really hardcore. Yeah. They just I hear there's a new PlayStation. I guess I'll buy the new PlayStation.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, they go into the store and there's a section dedicated to the games they love and they pick them up. And if not, they just connect their console to the internet and they buy games through there.
Treated them right and they have their account with them and they have no real reason to switch. I think a lot of people get like locked into one track. Mm-hmm. And then like you
Does
need to
mean though that they like still have their Atari.
Ooh.
Does that count?
I'm not sure.
I don't know if anybody still has responded. You're probably the only guy that still has his Atari.
Well, like, does it count? Like, I mean, everybody bought a PlayStation 2 at some point, probably.
Yeah.
If they still have their PlayStation 2, do they, is that just their one system?
I would assume it's that they're actively gaming on it. Like,
I think they graduate to the new one.
I understand how people work that way, but I'm wondering, what this statistic includes.
I also think that there's a significant cost to buying a second console. Yeah, and we're the odd ones for having everything in our living rooms. Like that's not typical. Typically
I never had that growing up. I always had one console and maybe by the time I got a Genesis, I was old enough to sort that out on my own.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I did when I was a kid. I got a Super Nintendo for my birthday, but for the Genesis, I saved up for it.
I was an idiot kid, but I ran the most sophisticated math trying to figure out split up birthday and Christmas to strategize 1 year. I really want a Genesis. It's that'll be both my presents. Mm-hmm. And then you don't need to give me anything for my birthday. We all pulled those shenanigans.
Yep.
Well, I only had an NES because the Master System was
garbage.
But then I got the TurboGrafx-16 before the Super Nintendo, and I was like, so long, Nintendo. I'm moving on to greener pastures, TurboGrafx-16. Mm-hmm. And then 6 months later, I was like, okay, Super Nintendo. Yep. So what's gonna be. But then not too long after that, I also had a Sega Genesis as well.
Yeah, so you are all over the place.
But only 16% of gamers play on all three platforms. Only 16% of survey respondents play on console, mobile, and PC. Which that seems kind of low to me.
Oh, so that's not all three consoles. That's just so it could be
These different console, mobile, and PC.
So it could be PS4, PC, and so I wonder if that could also mean you have an iPhone, you play a couple of games on Facebook here and there, but then you also have an Xbox One.
Sure.
Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, it's just like it's me. Like I play Switch and PC at home, and then I play phone games. When I'm trying to goof off and not work here in the office.
But here's where Nielsen's 360 Gamer Report 2017 gets a little fishy.
All right,
a little hinky,
a little fishy,
hinky.
They found that only 77% of gamers, people that identified as gamers, have heard of the PlayStation 4. What?
They're like, wait.
Only 77% have heard of the PlayStation 4. So that's where I'm like, I'm not sure.
Okay.
What's the point of calling these people gamers at that point?
Wait, so here's the thing. I'm sure everyone has heard the word PlayStation and understand the number 4. So they have to put 2 and 2 together to be like, this is clearly the 4th of the PlayStations.
Based on this data, 23% of gamers have never heard of the PlayStation 4.
I mean, I come back to...
You should listen to more GameScoop.
Yeah. The 100 million people that downloaded Pokemon Go or whatever. Again, whenever you're talking about surveys like this, I'm picturing my bus, where it's full of people that are all either playing Candy Crush or still Pokemon Go. Yeah. Those are the two games I see all day in, day out, to this day, including this morning. Yeah, they count, man. They're never, playing hours of games a week.
But to have never heard of it?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know about that.
It's just, yeah.
So 77% of gamers have heard of PS4. 72 have heard of Xbox One, so it's not far behind. But Switch and Scorpio, only 29% of survey respondents said they had heard of the Switch, and only 14% said they'd heard of Project Scorpio.
Wow, I mean that's actually surprisingly high number for a code name.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I think so.
And I actually think that's good news for Nintendo. It gives them lots of runway, lots of room to grow.
Yeah. I want to meet the people that have never heard of a PS4.
I do too.
And I want them to teach me something that I've never heard of. Like if there's knowledge that I have that I thought everyone had and I was wrong about that, and there's a whole thing that they know about that they're like, you didn't know about this, then I want to know what that thing is.
Ride Justin's bus.
It's true.
Let me know if
coming over tonight.
Let me know if this surprised you guys. 69% of console gamers prefer physical software. While 75% of PC gamers prefer digital.
Right.
I buy it.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Because, I mean, where are they buying these games then? I guess they're getting from Amazon? Because, I mean, we're seeing physical sales are declining year over year at GameStop.
Well, I know GameStop's in a tremendous amount of trouble, but there's still thousands.
Walmart and Target. And there's also still Walmart and Target, Best Buy.
Yeah, interesting.
And but Amazon, people, all gamers across all platforms who prefer digital spend more time gaming. Even on consoles.
Yeah, you're not switching those discs.
Yeah. Like they have more time.
Hundreds of hours a week switching that disc.
They have
you
more
lose
time
the disc, you put it in the wrong case.
That's a
terrible
good
life to live.
Yeah, I mean, digital implies you have good broadband internet access.
Yeah, of course.
And so many people don't still. That's the scariest thing of all.
And I think digital, PC on digital is like code name for Steam, in my opinion. And Steam's still a fairly hardcore platform.
Codename Steam?
No, not Codename Steam. That's a completely different thing.
Abraham Lincoln Steam.
If someone's a PC gamer and they prefer digital games, I presume that they're probably a Steam gamer, which, again, it's getting more and more casual every year, but it's still fairly hardcore.
As for factors that influence game purchases, 80% said genre influences them. Makes sense. They buy the games in the genres they like. 74% graphics and 71% said story. So that's the formula for a winning game, a popular genre with great graphics and a cool story.
Easy.
That's all you gotta do.
What about cool podcasts? With handsome hosts.
Yeah, you gotta
have. It's neat that graphics still matter that much.
What's up?
I think it's neat that graphics matter that much.
I mean, I've always said. Actually, this is the first time I've ever said this.
It's a TurboGrafx 16. I've been saying.
As long as video games are something you look at,
yeah,
graphics are gonna matter to me.
Totally.
But you know that means all sorts of things. Like
it can be pretty.
Yeah, just pretty. Like Breath of the Wild doesn't look as technically impressive as Horizon Zero Dawn, but both games are very pretty too.
It's got a great art style.
We have a feature on IGN about audio only games.
Yeah.
Mm.
There's one that's narrated by Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh really?
Or it's called what's it called? I'd like to name drop it. The Nightjar. That's what it's called. And you put on your headphones, and then you're like on a spaceship, and he's like walking you through. He's like, "There's a monster right behind you. You gotta." And then you tap to move forward, and you can like tap to turn. The conceit is that you're in a spaceship where there's absolutely no light at all. It's completely pitch black. And
what platform is this?
I have it on my phone on iOS.
And what's it called?
The Nightjar.
Oh, and I want to check that out. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty trippy. I don't know how.
You use earbuds, so it's like really stereo based.
Yeah. Mm. And like Benedict Cumberbatch, he wasn't as big as he was now, but he'd already been in like. So I'm like, how did you get this guy to do this? He'd already been in like Sherlock.
Is this a couple years old then?
Yeah, it's pretty old.
All right, moving on. We had an image leak from the next Assassin's Creed game this week, and this is what corroborated by three independent sources from Eurogamer. And the screenshot that was leaked seems to confirm the Egyptian setting, which was leaked last year.
Yeah,
lots of leaks for Assassin's Creed. Actually, didn't
there's
we have
a single pyramid in it? How are we confirming this?
Well, because the quest up it in the on the corner says you're trying to find this Egyptian queen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a known Egyptian, like a real life Egyptian queen.
It is known.
It is known.
And then doesn't it also say assassinate a crocodile?
Yeah, that's like the quest
really?
Name. Yeah. Assassinate the crocodile. It's the crocodile.
Which rhymes.
Not just a crocodile.
Which rhymes with Nile.
Because as people pointed out, I think we did assassinate a crocodile in Assassin's Creed 4.
Yeah.
But now it's time to take out the crocodile.
Dude, 4 is so good.
Well, we get the screenshot shows you piloting a boat. So we got boats come back.
Mm-hmm. Man, Egypt, I don't know. There's no tall buildings in Egypt.
Tall pyramids.
That's what everyone, they're like, you're going to climb that Sphinx and that pyramid. And I'm like, yeah, okay, then what?
That's 4.
Yeah, that's 30 seconds of gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there'll be really tall trees.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll make stuff up.
To be fair, 4, which is 4 is my second favorite Assassin's Creed, and it wasn't, you know, it de-emphasized the climbing as well, so that's fine.
Right.
Didn't we have a story today that there have been 13 Assassin's Creed games and 12 of them have
everything
leaked
ahead of time
before Ubisoft could announce them?
Yep.
Yeah.
leaked in quotes.
Well,
conspiracy.
Yeah, there.
Illuminati confirmed.
Well, most of them were like on airplanes too. It's like a guy on an iPad on an airplane, and somebody's.
Oh yeah.
It's either someone's over the shoulder or someone's like, "Hey, what's that?" And he's like, "It's the new Assassin's Creed game coming to consoles this fall."
Wouldn't that be great if they did set it up that way, where they're like, "All right, listen, you're gonna go on the plane, and just open this PDF and just."
And just like hold it out, see who's looking.
That's what happened. It was Assassin's Creed 4 that happened to. And there were two leaks. And one was a guy just working on a PowerPoint presentation that's like pirate battles, this, that. And then it's like, what are you thinking doing that on an airplane? And then the other one was a guy struck up a conversation with the guy next to him on either the plane or the bus. He's like, what do you do? I make video games. Oh, I love video games. What are you working on? It's the new Assassin's Creed. Here's what it is.
That's funny. Maybe he thought he was one of those Nielsen reporters that has never heard of the PS4.
And we don't know how this one is leaked, right?
It's
photo taken off.
It's an off-screen shot from a side. It looks to be in like a boardroom or
some sort of conference. I think what people need to remember.
It's a television.
What people need to remember for these games is they are worked on by like 8 different studios globally,
like 1,000 people.
Synchronicity. It's insane.
At what point during that demo was the person with the camera being like, "All right. What are we going to show them? What is it going to be at? Boat? Alligator? Check."
Yeah.
And like if they just had turned around, there's like 3 giant pyramids and like a skyscraper.
I know.
An Egyptian skyscraper.
We get the alligator and the shield sword instead. I'm into it.
So I have a few questions for you guys. How, you know, Assassin's Creed took the year off last year.
Yep.
Except for the movie. How are we feeling about Assassin's Creed these days?
I mean, the rumors are great about this one.
In general. You like what you're hearing?
Yeah.
Ready to get back into it.
Yeah, I didn't like... I mean, nobody liked... what was the France one? Unity
and so I didn't like Syndicate was
Marty
the last one.
Marty liked it.
Reviewed it.
Unity?
Yeah.
Syndicate's the one that
was Syndicate.
Yeah. Unity was London, right?
Yeah, so I didn't like either. And people really liked Syndicate, but I was just... The formula felt very tired to me by then. I think they did the absolute right thing by taking a year off.
But to be fair, like...
Whole year.
None of what we're seeing so far right here, and it's hard to sort of derive a ton from just these screenshots, but none of them really leap out at me as, like, this is a brand new take on the franchise. Like, Breath of the Wild was a brand new take on Zelda. This doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, or maybe, so like, how the new God of War looks like a fresh take on that.
Totally.
It's a really good example. Like, I mean, if it says assassinate an alligator, I'm like, oh, well... That's
again. It's Assassin's the alligator.
Yeah, but don't tell me you don't want to do that.
Of course, I want to do that. Man. Yeah, no, I spent the weekend in Florida. Kill those things.
I've always described the series, and you're gonna have to bleep this as same shit, different hats.
Yeah,
and I'm hoping they break with that. Well, there's like the colonial hats in the one game. Mm-hmm. There's pirate hats in the next game.
Yeah.
Little pork pie hats, and then I don't need to explain that the same shit, different hats principle. But it really is that game is not changing very much. But everybody likes open world games, and I really like exploration. And man, Egypt sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So hey, if it's a big exploration game in Egypt, that could work.
Yeah, the setting sounds cool. I hope the new character's interesting. They really need to get as far away as possible from the future present day stuff.
Yeah.
Like I've been saying that for a long time. I know most people agree with me. Yeah. There's a couple people who are like, I like it. And then they made that movie that was like 50% present day stuff. Like, get away from
an office building.
You know what else they need to get away from? Where you stab a guy in the neck and then you grab and you go, Tempest Fugitive.
Yeah.
And then you have a long thing and then you come out of it and it's like, nah.
You got to get away from that thing where 9 dudes are chasing you and you just like go to jump and then you land on a wall and they all start climbing up the wall. Like, there's like one button that does 4 things. I know they've made that a little bit better, but.
Yeah.
So I think Metal Gear Solid 5 could influence the series really nicely.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I love
Metal Gear Solid 5.
Me too.
I also think just like GTA, just like really embrace your open worldness. I mean, Assassin's Creed has never really taken as much advantage of being an open world game as it should have, in my opinion.
No, because they have to make a new one every year, and there's only so much they can do with that, right?
And there's no cars.
I love that idea. And there's no cars. Yeah, there's horses.
Hey, check this out. E3 kicks off 1 month from today.
Ah!
Yeah.
Ooh,
cool.
On that Sweet. Saturday with EA Play.
I'll be there.
We'll be there. So I just wonder if Ubisoft is planning this big reveal of the next Assassin's Creed for its E3 press conference, which is still on Monday, I believe.
Yeah, I'm guessing we're going to get that. We'll get stuff on a new Far Cry game, hopefully.
I'm making the prediction right here. I think we're going to hear about their Avatar stuff this year.
Mm.
Get excited.
Avatar stuff. Game. They have that rumored Nintendo Rabbids game.
Yeah.
Mario.
That'd be at their conference or Nintendo's?
Well, I think Ubisoft is leading development on it, so I don't know.
Steep 2.
Steeper.
That's really good. Do you expect this new Assassin's Creed game will be released this year?
Yes.
Yeah.
It'll take 2 years off.
Yeah.
Without an Assassin's Creed.
I hope they take 2 years off every time after this, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think putting one out every year fatigued us, and, you know, take your time.
13 Assassin's Creed games. It's a lot. Exactly. Does that include, like, the 2D ones?
No, but it included the PSP one. We cheated. We said 12 out of 13 in our headline, but that wasn't quite accurate because there was a bunch of weird spin-off-y ones.
Business,
but
there were the DS ones.
Yeah.
The card games too? On iOS.
It was. The card game on iOS was pretty cool.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Moving on. Last week, we concluded our top 100 RPGs of all time.
Yeah. Everyone was so happy with it. I didn't get any complaints.
Not a single complaint this time.
The perfect list, they called it.
Yep. NeoGAF loved it.
Just cement it.
I liked the list a lot.
Flawless.
I didn't know a lot of those games on it, which made me like it more.
Mm. We calculate how many hours it would take to beat all 100 of those games.
That would be a good, thousands. Be a good statistic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How old is Steve Butts?
I mean,
thousands. It would take that long.
The Witcher 3 is 100, so...
There are actually a bunch in the top 10 that I've never played, I hate to say. Of course, Chrono Trigger was number one. Played Final Fantasy VI, but I've never played any Baldur's Gate.
Oh, neither.
Are there only two?
There's Baldur's Gate 1 and 2.
Yeah, I've never played either of them.
Two things. There's like remastered, remade editions. Not remastered, but just updated and modernized. They're just old, right? So they did a bunch of quality of life improvements to the menus and stuff in the enhanced editions that are on PC. Mm. But those enhanced editions are on mobile.
And they play well on mobile?
I played one on mobile and it was fine.
Yeah. It's not too much. It's no trouble to play it on PC.
Yeah. And they're
turn-based RPGs?
No, they're real-time combat with pause. So they use the actual like Dungeons & Dragons combat system. So I don't know how to explain it.
Was it like Divinity where you run around in real-time, but when you get battles turn-based?
No, the battles happen in real-time, but you can pause whenever you want and like set up action. So it's like you have a party of six, so... Dragon Age is a spiritual successor, and it's BioWare. It's the same team. Dragon Age is absolutely deliberately trying to bring Baldur's Gate into the modern age, at least Dragon Age 1. And so the way that I play the game, and you can also set up like pause conditions anytime my character gets hit, pause it. So it can kind of feel like a turn-based game if you want. But I like to pause, tell all my characters what to do, unpause, and then they start like moving. And as things start to change and happen, I pause it again.
Hold up.
Yep.
I know I told you to attack that guy, but
no,
I want you to heal him.
Baldur's Gate 2 in particular.
What's the world? It's just D&D?
Yeah, I mean, it's the world of Baldur's Gate, you know. Like, that's the city, and then the world is...
it's like a fantasy game, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Baldur's Gate 2 in particular has probably one of the best, like, just fictional cities in any video game ever. Almost the whole game takes place in this massive, sprawling city, and it's... probably 200 hours of content, and it's got one of those, it's like it's that special feeling game where it's like there's someone standing on a corner and they're like, I have a quest for you, and then it turns into some like 8-hour ordeal where there's like vampires and betrayals and like you can totally like walk by it and just never experience any of that. Like, it's such a special game.
So it wasn't your fault, but none of that sounds interesting to me. Like, I would never play that game.
Oh man,
it's not, you know, I think your description was good job. It's just not my type of game.
I mean, I like the pre-rendered isometric art.
Yeah, I like that too.
It's hardcore like D&D, so they didn't have a lot of flexibility and freedom in how to structure their combat because they were using D&D's combat system. But that does mean you have complete freedom, like your character class, like you can have like a thief mage or like whatever you want. Like, I don't know, game was great.
Continuing counting down the top 10 backwards, there's Pokemon Yellow, and then there's World of Warcraft, another game I've never played.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never played Planescape Torment.
It's the same deal. I mean, it's the same engine. Same
as Baldur's Gate?
Yeah, it's another Infinity Engine game. So Planescape Torment is notable for it probably has the best story in a video game ever. Not, I will remove the probably. It's got the best video game story ever written.
So did you play Pokemon Yellow?
Oh, yeah. Back in the day.
Were you hauling Pikachu around behind you the whole game?
I was in college. And I was
Yellow is a weird game. It's like a weird spin-off of, you know.
I had a yellow Game Boy Color too.
We got some flack for having it be yellow instead of red or blue. I know they're not completely interchangeable. We kind of think about them as being mostly interchangeable, and yellow is just, you know, a slightly improved version of red or blue in my opinion.
Yeah.
Planescape Torment is another game where I talked about how Baldur's Gate will have, you'll talk to a random person, you can totally blow past and it'll open up a whole quest. Planescape does that, but with conversation. Like in the tutorial dungeon, you can have these long, like spidering conversations with these NPCs that you find that raise interesting philosophical questions and really make you think about things and like the nature of the world. And your character is immortal. He can't die. And that's a game mechanic, but it's also part of the story. And it really delves into what that means and what that's like. And like, every single, like, you pick up a ring in the game and it has like a paragraph of flavor text about the ring that's actually really interesting and fascinating. Like, the sheer volume of text that's worth reading. Like, I know it might sound boring, but like,
yeah, it sounds boring.
But like, when you're in it and experiencing it, like, it's really high quality. Like, it's not crappy writing, it's great writing. Yeah. And
well, that's what I feel like Mass Effect was at one point.
Yeah.
It's the universe, and reading about the universe is like really cool to me.
You have a like just stuff that would have been played for laughs or whatever in other games. Like one of your companion members is a floating talking skull. And like he is like a comedy relief character, but then he's also like, yo, it sucks being a floating talking skull sometimes. So it's like you get into that too. Like, oh man, Planescape. Mm.
Well, rounding out the back half of the top 10 was Secret of Mana, Diablo 2, Vagrant Story, which again, I've never played.
Mm-hmm. Me neither.
And Witcher 3.
Yeah.
Which I played some of, not enough though.
Secret of Mana is really interesting. It's a great game.
I love that game. It's
on the action side of RPGs from that era.
Yeah. Speaking of Secret of Mana, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey. Hi, listeners.
Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Joe from Queens did.
Cool.
You know, when you were a kid growing up in Kansas, the suburbs of Kansas in the 80s, your entire frame of reference for Queens, New York City, is Coming to America.
Yes.
That's it. That's, yeah. Everything comes from that.
The anagram for Joe from Queens is Joe's from Queen.
Yep. That's true. That's true.
Got it.
You know, who also is from Queens is the Ramones.
Yeah, it's true.
Joe says, I've read that Square Enix is releasing a bundle of RPGs for the Nintendo Switch, including the Secret of Mana and a never-released in North America sequel. Being a young kid when those games came out, and Secret of Mana being so high on your recent best RPG list, I would really love to play those games. Any chance this bundle gets released in the U.S., and what are your thoughts on these games?
Is that true? That's the first I've heard of this.
Well, it is a bundle. It's a bundle announced for Japan. For
Switch.
Okay. Of the entire like Mana series, whatever
it's coming to Switch?
Yes, in Japan.
So
not announced for the U.S.
Playing Japanese games on your Switch is incredibly easy to do.
Yeah, super easy.
I don't know about Japanese RPGs that are all in Japanese. Yeah.
So you played Disgaea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the entire collection's been up on the Japanese eShop for a while, and it's fully translated in English. So you wanted that today, you could get it today. So the way to do that is you create a Japanese account, super easy. You just make an alternate My Nintendo account with a throwaway email address, and you choose your location as Japanese. Or Japan, and you go in there and you buy eShop credit off of something like, you know,
Amazon
or something like that. You drop it in there.
That's how you're saying they're easy to download and play that way. Dame is just saying it might be hard to play because it's in Japanese.
Yeah. So
apparently Disgaea has already been translated.
So a lot of the games have, because they're old games, they already have English language options.
This one doesn't.
Are you sure?
Famously doesn't. Yeah. Seiken Densetsu 3 is a fantastic Super Famicom game that has a fan translation.
Got it.
I played that.
Okay, so what you need to do is download the Rosetta Stone.
Yeah.
Learn Japanese in its entirety. Super easy.
I'm not sure if it's a loophole on Nintendo's fault that they just didn't think about or didn't catch, or if they're deliberately making it easy to let people, you know, download games in the Japanese store, you know, France store, wherever you
I
want.
I think they're just kind of being good guy Nintendo for something.
Maybe for once.
Yeah, that collection's really amazing because there's a Game Boy game that kicked it off.
Was that one of the Final Fantasy Adventures, or is that not?
It's what they call it.
So it's not. There's Final Fantasy Legends 1-3, but I believe that one's based on Final Fantasy Adventure.
Mm.
And again, like I didn't do research ahead of this, but I love Secret of Mana. I've read about this a million times and heard about it a lot. But that one on Super Nintendo is like a lost, full featured JRPG from Square, you know, from that time period.
Yeah, that rules.
And it looks as beautiful as the most beautiful parts of Final Fantasy VI or Chrono Trigger, where there's like these like, you know, lush forests and like crazy giant bosses. And, you know, it's just incredible. Like, it's incredible we never got that here. It's a 16-bit masterpiece.
That's so cool.
It's exciting to me because I know someday everybody's going to have access to that game and play it because it's just...
Switch is really good for stuff like that, too. Like, I got a copy of I Am Setsuna, which is like a kind of like mid-tier RPG. It never really like elevates above what it sets out to do. But playing an RPG on Switch is awesome because you can just kind of grind and then just hit a button, then go do something else and come back. Like, it's really good for pick up and play stuff.
Yeah. Chrono Trigger's best version was always on DS. It's so good.
Yeah, I'd love that game on Switch.
Yeah. Do you know if that collection includes, like, because that franchise sort of continued on through, like, the PS1 era?
There's a PS2 game.
Yeah.
The Mana
Legend
game,
like, of Mana was the one that I played, where that the gorgeous, like, painterly art style, I think it's Legend. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I know it's focused on that series, but I guess I don't know.
Yeah.
It includes the later games too. This is Ryan from New York, and he says, "Hey Damon, Justin, Sam, and other human.
Hey, what's up?
Huge fan of the show. It's my favorite podcast each week. Not sure if you like being called a podcast. Sure, that's not offensive in the slightest.
How we like being called,
dare you?
We like being called as Cog Poem."
But Ryan says, "I choose to opt for the audio version because I travel a lot. Thanks for the happiness that you guys bring me. As a kid, I have fond memories of playing licensed games. The few that come to mind are The Simpsons Hit and Run, the 007 games, SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom, The Lord of the Rings Return of the King, and The Incredibles."
That's a weird list.
Yeah, well, that's why, because I'm picturing a very different set of licensed games.
Yeah, and of course, the many Star Wars games. Today, licensed games seem to be an afterthought, and I don't quite understand why. And when we do see them, they're often not very good. What gives? Why don't we see much of them anymore? Were those games actually bad and my child brain was too easily amused? Or has the quality of licensed games severely diminished with these newer generations? Please discuss.
The answer is mobile. Mobile gets every sort of license tie-in to anything these days. It's incredibly rare to get like a full-fledged AAA tie-in to a movie. One, because the cost of making that game is so expensive and the time it takes to make that game is so, you know, prohibitively long. And two, because it's like, what's the benefit of that when you can just have a free-to-play game on mobile and make a bunch of money? Like, we don't have a Star Wars Force Awakens game. We got Lego Star Wars, which, like, was the closest we got, right? But there are a bunch of, like, Star Wars apps on your phone that are mostly free-to-play. They're made by EA, and you can dump $1 or $1,000 into them if you want to.
Yeah, and some Avatar games.
Yeah.
I mean, licensed games, and I don't mean this in a pejorative way, but just they're meant for, like, more casual fans. Like, oh, I'm a big fan of Iron Man. I want to continue interacting with Iron Man, so I'll buy this Iron Man video game. Like, the thinking's usually not too much more sophisticated than that. So, so that's why mobile makes total sense, is, like, I'm going to type Iron Man into my phone and just see what pops up versus paying $50 or $60 for, you know, a console game.
I have a little bit more negative view of them than that. The reason is because there have always been bad licensed games, and that's because the whole step one of that process is, let's capitalize on this popular IP.
Right.
Step one isn't, let's make a great video game.
Well, and here's your development schedule. It's very short.
Yeah. Exactly.
And if you look at E.T.'s story.
Yeah. Look at one of the, and he mentioned it, right? One of the greatest licensed games of all time is GoldenEye. And that game came out 2 years after that movie did. Yeah. And they were like, they didn't say let's cash in on this. They said let's make a really good game, and it got delayed like crazy. So I mean, we could get them. Like, I thought it was nuts that we didn't get a single video game based on like The Dark Knight. But there is one on your iPhone, right?
I think there was.
There's also the
there
Arkham
was one
series.
For the
Batman
first
Begins game.
Batman
it was a Batman Begins.
So that's what, like, Batman Begins, and I think the first Iron Man, they did get crappy console games. And, like, the reason those kind of, like, those games got such a bad rap because they were terrible. Mm-hmm. And now it's funny that you're seeing them come back a little bit. Like, you're seeing Guardians of the Galaxy, and you're seeing you're seeing Marvel get really serious about video games by sort of smart, you know, strategic partnerships. And I think companies are just finally, like, it was a simpler time back then, and companies have finally tried to be a little bit more thoughtful about matching up the right brands with the right developers and the right type of game, like the Mr. Robot license game being made by the what's that game Marty loved so much, the adventure game
Oxenfree.
Yeah made by that Oxenfree group, where it's like, that's really smart, and then you hear it and you're like, oh, that totally makes sense.
Well,
like,
we've also got this thing happening now where games are services more, right? And you look at something like Marvel Heroes, which gets tie-ins when new movies come out, and that's their sort of way to being like, we've got licensed stuff from Fantastic Four, Battlefront, right? Huge game that covered the original trilogy, but they're like, here's a level based on Jakku. The new game has some stuff from Episode 7. 7, and hopefully we'll have stuff from Episode 8, but it's not a straight-up Episode 8 game. Like, it's them telling their own story and then folding in some stuff from that universe.
Yeah. No, I think the quality of licensed games has improved greatly over the years. They've gotten smart about it. They've actually, like, they've figured out how to capitalize on the popularity of the license and also make a really good game. Mm-hmm. Like all the Arkham games, KOTOR, you know, was, like, one of the first... Yeah. Well, at least one of the first great Star Wars games that I played.
Yeah.
Tony Hawk was a great licensed game in the 90s.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting a new Spider-Man game, right? Yeah. But it probably will have no connection to the movie outside of like some little details here and there. Like, it's not going to be based on the new Marvel
movie.
That's
a difference. It's like borrowing the license, like the beloved thing that someone loves to put their own spin. Like, you know, the Batman Telltale game is not retelling the story of the games.
No.
Like, that just doesn't make sense in almost any context.
It's a whole new Batman, and it's not telling the story of any of the movies. It's just a new Batman story, which is cool.
A decade before this year's Logan, we got an R-rated Wolverine game.
Yeah.
That was, it was like a 7. But it was cool. It was like the first time that I saw Wolverine act as violently as he should from the comics.
Right. And, you know, like, to be fair,
it was
like
a Hulk game at that time, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, we're,
yeah, I think Ultimate Destruction was good.
Like, that's what it was.
Ultimate. And we're describing, like, why this is the way this is now. But, I mean, in many ways, like, I kind of do miss it. Like, I walk out of a movie and I'm like, I want to go home and play that, and I can't. For the most part. So it kind of sucks. Like, I miss some licensed games, you know? Like, there are some really good ones.
Spider-Man was really good.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Oh, man. But remember on the NES? Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Beetlejuice, TNC Surf Designs, Predator, Rambo, Total Recall, Gremlins, Gilligan's Island, Yo Noi, Cool World. And the list goes on and on. They're all
Cool World.
Terrible.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, there was a Cool World
game. The Brad Pitt movie.
Well, yeah. There's a young Brad Pitt in that movie, for sure. Time for your NES fun fact. I don't know if Justin saw the answer already.
Fun.
Castlevania 3. Who do you play as in Castlevania 3?
Trevor Belmont.
Yep. Except in Japan. What's his name in Japan?
Yonoid.
Ralph.
Ralph
Belmont?
Nope. Ralph Belmondo.
Oh. What? Ralph Belmondo?
In the Japanese version of Castlevania 3, you play as Ralph Belmondo.
So in the end of Castlevania 1, just here, it credits Simon Belmondo.
Yeah.
Which
they didn't even. It also credits the music to James Banana.
What?
That's real.
Yeah, that's real.
All the people are fake. And Boris Karloffis is.
Well, that's what half the. Well, it's fake. Are all the credits pun names?
Yeah, they're all just nonsense. They're not even puns.
Half of them are puns off of famous horror franchises.
Oh, Boris Karloffis is.
Yeah.
I don't know what James Banana is.
That one doesn't make as much sense.
Watch the ending of Castlevania on YouTube. It's so funny. Yeah, Simon Belmondo.
And then find Ralph Belmondo in Ralph the Japanese version of Castlevania 3.
We got Grant Danasty was the dagger guy in that game. And Sifa is the other wizard.
It's pretty good.
Alucard, which is Dracula backwards, which is an anagram.
It's time to share what we've been playing. Who would like to share first?
We have 2 weeks to cover, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is going to be a long segment.
All right. I'll order pizza.
Yes. Ooh. It's pizza time.
Yeah, oh, pizza party.
So I mentioned this morning that last night we watched Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
My wife was inspired to watch Howard the Duck for the first time since her childhood because of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wait, what, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's
the
awesome.
Opposite of inspired from watching Howard the Duck.
And so Howard comes from a bizarro planet where, you know, the ducks evolved into humanoid creatures, right?
Mammalian ducks.
But other than that, their society is much like ours. They still live in cities with skyscrapers, and they drive cars,
wear
clothes. They do. They have pornography. And they know about animals from our planet, like gorillas and monkeys, dogs, right? So very similar. Until, while Howard is on our planet, someone says they ordered a pizza, and he says, "What's a pizza?"
Dun, 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 dun.
So on their planet, they have everything we have except pizza.
Except for pizza,
does
which makes
like
no
pizza?
Sense.
He scoffs at it because he's focused on trying to get back home.
Maybe he just eats worms and ponds.
I think you should write somebody.
George Lucas.
I hope someone gets fired for that blunder.
George Lucas presents in big letters, right?
I rented that movie way more times than I should have when I was a kid.
Oh,
do you know that like he has sex with a human woman in that movie?
Yeah they don't. What? They don't outright have sex, but they are like they flirt with having sex.
Pretty heavily implied.
They get pretty physical.
Yeah.
There are duck boobs in the beginning of that movie. He has a duck condom in his wallet.
Yep.
Man, that movie is so weird. And my poor grandpa took me to see that movie in theaters.
Oh, really?
Sorry, Grandpa, wherever you are, I'm sorry you had to sit
through. Basically Sonic the Hedgehog.
Howard the Duck.
Wow.
Anyway, what have we been playing?
Mario Kart. Tons and tons and tons of Mario Kart. I've been traveling a lot, flying to the East Coast and back. I flew cross country 4 times in like 5 days, and I got to play a ton of Mario Kart by myself. And then I was doing a shoot in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with Max Scoville and Mega Ran, the rapper. And one night we were like, we don't know what to do in Florida. Let's get a bottle of booze, go in a hotel room, and just play Mario Kart like crazy. And we had this like brilliant moment where Mega Ran was like, I have my dock. I can plug into the TV. Can we play wireless with each other? And we were like, I think you can.
Yeah.
Like, why couldn't you? So we each had our own screen, and we just played 3.5 hours of Grand Prix and battle mode, and it's just so much fun. And I was like one of the people that was like, why would I ever play this game again? And you know, here I am now 25 something hours in and loving it.
Me too. I'm playing a tremendous amount of Mario Kart. Fuck the blue shell. It's gotta go.
That wasn't just added in Mario Kart 8.
Yeah.
No, but man, like, I guess I didn't play that much. 7 was on the 3DS, and I might have skipped that one. Yeah. Like, I know, so here's the deal. I know everybody hates the blue shell to the point that it's become like a meme. Like, you hate the blue shell. But we gotta talk about that blue shell.
Yeah.
It's gotta go.
You know what I love about that blue shell?
Nothing.
Is when you're in first place, and you slow down just a little bit, second place is coming up behind you. You get hit with that blue shell, and second place gets rocked, and you're both screwed, and then you both take off. I love it.
But then sometimes the blue shell hits everybody on the way up.
Yeah, that's a pain in the ass.
Sometimes you slam on the brakes, and then still get hit with the blue shell.
And the person just
player two just zooms by you. No, I mean, I did two. I did all of 50cc, all of 100cc, and I'm working my way through 150. And like, I don't have a tremendous amount of time to play video games in my life right now. I'm a father, as you probably
know. Does the Switch help with that?
Yeah, it does. But so I did 2 Grand Prix, and I was in first place. I got to get 3 stars. Otherwise, what's the point? What are we even doing here if I'm not getting 3 stars?
Totally with you.
So, and I made it to the final lap of the final track and got hit by a blue shell and came in 2nd, 2 stars. So then I'm angry, but I do it again, and it happens again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this isn't fun. It's not good game design.
You got to redo the whole cup. Yeah.
Let me explain to you the problem with the blue shell. You can't, like, you can't do anything.
Yes, you can.
It's coming. You can slam on the brakes.
No.
There's a counter.
No. If you get the red horn thing, you can cancel the blue shell. That's something they added in this game.
I didn't realize that.
You can defeat the blue shell with the red horn. So get that fucking horn. And let that blue shell know what's up.
But the big problem I have with the blue shell is if you're in last place, like the lightning bolt feels really good, the bullet feels really good, the star feels really good, but the blue shell doesn't help you. It's just like it's just firing off an FU to someone.
Some people save it until they're like in third place and then fire it off.
Yeah, but then that ghost comes and takes it and all sorts of hijinks. Yeah,
it's scary. It's scary to hold on to it because of the ghost. That's the biggest sin that I have against it, is that when you're in last place, it doesn't feel even really good to use, so it's just everybody. He's angry.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. You know, speaking of not being fun, I've gotten back into Darkest Dungeon, which is very fun.
The end of that game, though.
And the reason I got back into it is because the PS4 version was just updated with the new Radiant mode, which is a little bit like faster, speedier mode that makes it a lot quicker to get to the final Darkest Dungeon. And that game is super fun. I'm enjoying playing it. However, it has made me realize that there is a long-running video game mechanic that has existed since the beginning of turn-based combat, and I think it's time for it to go, because it is also not fun, and that's missing.
Oh,
when you miss,
so dumb.
When you miss the enemies, and I feel like it happens a lot in Darkest Dungeon, and it's like, why is this... This keeps happening, and this doesn't make me feel good. It's not fun. It's like,
is there a stat associated with
missing?
It,
I mean, yeah, but like, why is missing still in video games? Take missing out. However, I think the enemies should still be able to miss me.
Well, there was a role-playing game I was playing recently where, like, I missed, and then the enemy missed, and then I missed. I'm like, what are we even doing here? What's the...
Like, it's fine in, like, an action game. That makes sense. But in turn-based combat, it's just... No.
I should clarify that I am with you. I'm completely adoring Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I'm 48 courses, you know, infinite. It just feels like the jazz soundtrack is so good.
That band has to be getting laid constantly.
Yeah.
Band is
a real band?
Yeah, that's a real human live band. Yeah, they got a whole...
They just had like a composer there.
No, it's like a jazz orchestra, and they're just having tons of sex.
So it is. The game's incredible. So Blue Shell rant aside, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, completely worth it. A fantastic and the best Mario Kart, you know, straight up. But yeah, man,
This is that Donkey Kong course from Double Dash. Yep.
That one flaw, that fatal flaw.
Maybe they'll have DLC.
And they're missing Block Fort for battle mode, which is, I mean, come on, guys. Why did you even bother? Throw it back in the garbage.
Or like Block Fart. Sam, that's what I used to say.
It's not an anagram.
Sam, are you still playing? Oh, no, you're playing something new.
I have been playing Mario Kart as well, yeah. But not the Mario Kart you guys have been playing. I played the new arcade Mario Kart. I went to Portland, went to Quarter World, great arcade, and played a lot of this great new Mario Kart. Takes your picture. It's called GP something, something, something.
Yeah.
Namco made it. It has the Taiko Drum Master guy in it.
It's so cool. Yeah, I play that. Really cool.
Here's what's great about it. No blue shell. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Item management is basically if you hit the blocks, you get to fire off an item. You also have some blasts. Other than that, no power sliding. Just stay on the course. Hit the strips. It looks beautiful. Mm. And like if there's a little kid playing it, you just sit down next to them and just beat them, and then they have to leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Yep. That's the etiquette.
Welcome to the arcade.
Great, great, cool game. So while
the mustache man wouldn't let me play the Gecko the Carding game anymore.
I took a picture of myself as Rosalina, and it just looked exactly like my hair.
Yep.
So I went to some used, a lot of used game store stuff up there, and I brought back a rare game that I've been playing a lot of, which is Kirby Superstar.
Oh, cool.
Super Deluxe in Japan?
It's the Super Deluxe in Japan. That's a cute name. I've always heard that that's the Kirby game. Now, for me, I like a different Kirby game. It's called Kirby's Dream Course, which is a mini golf game. I don't like a lot of other Kirby games. It's not my series. But this game I always heard is the best. And the reason it is, it's like eight games in one. Pretty interesting. All the games are like giant Kirby games. There's just a few mini games. And one of them is like an exploration-based, like Metroidvania type thing. You have to explore this huge area for treasures. And the treasures have stuff from Metroid and Earthbound. Mm. Stuff in it. It's really cool.
Wow, that rules.
Yeah, it's like a good, well-thought-out game. And it's made by Sakurai and team right before Smash Brothers.
And you bought this on like a physical cart?
Yeah, I just got the cart.
And you're playing on an actual Super Nintendo?
I got a good deal on it. Thanks,
the Smash Brothers.
Yeah, it started on my TV in the office.
You were remarking, and you know, I've known this is true because I played, what's it called, Superstar?
Yeah, this Kirby Superstar.
Is that what you're,
it came out, by the way, in 1996.
That's right before Smash.
Which is like,
and Sakurai will go on to make Smash. So if you play, like, everybody played Smash Brothers, but not very many people played this Kirby. And going back, you see, like, I recognize this and this. Yep. And this and this, like, yeah, all the stuff that they would lift like and take over into Smash.
That's how I felt with
the menus feel like Smash.
The menus and then like all that references to Nintendo.
Did you guys play Kirby Air Ride? Like it's not it's the kind of fun. It sort of plays itself, but like the menus and the unlocks in that game are completely Smash Brothers Melee, and like it, you know, they're around the same time, and you look at it and you're like, oh, I see how all this influenced each other. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a really interesting game.
And the opening splash screen is amazing and looks like a Nintendo 64.
So they tried to make it look as much as they could like a Nintendo 64 game because Nintendo 64 was out.
Right.
It was just out. And then I know you played a little bit of Prey, and I've been playing Prey, and I just think it's dull. It's a cool setting in the beginning, and then it hasn't really hooked me. I'll try to keep playing.
The story is very, very intriguing, but I'm not enjoying the gameplay.
Right.
Yeah. I'm probably not going to go back to it. To be fair, I only played, I didn't even get to 2/3 of the weapons because I only played 2 hours. I'm like, I just wasn't feeling it. Life's too short.
Yeah, apparently, once you get a couple more of these, psi powers or whatever in it, it's supposed to be interesting, but it definitely didn't grab me. It's no Bioshock for me. I just like the setting of Bioshock more than the setting of Prey.
Sure.
Period. So
I didn't give it much of a fair shot, to be fair, but the couple hours I did play, I was a little bored.
Yeah.
I do want to check it out. And finally, it is time to play Video Game 20 Questions.
I thought we already played.
And our suggestion this week comes from Chad Lankford.
Where's he from?
He didn't say. So sorry.
I didn't form.
So sorry, you're going to have to play without that information.
All right.
We don't know how old he is. Or
let the questioning begin.
Chad. Is it Camp Goose? No. You start, Justin. You're good at this.
No, I'm really not.
Yes, you are.
Does your character speak?
Yes.
Ooh, it's not Chrono Trigger.
Huh.
Good morning, Chrono.
I mean, doesn't your character speak in Zelda?
No.
Yeah. Hyah.
That doesn't count. Ah. That doesn't count.
Those are words.
Doesn't count.
Yeah, I think so. Hyah is a word.
You get to choose responses.
Underrated part of Breath of the Wild, by the way, is that when you're on a horse, the go faster button, it's labeled as Hyah in the on screen prompt.
I love that. What a
now
great
we're
game.
All in trouble for talking about Zelda. Thanks for nothing.
Are we not allowed to do that anymore?
Yes, we're not allowed to do that anymore.
Oh.
All right, so your character speaks.
Can you see your hands in this game?
Yes.
So it's 18 questions, everybody. Enjoy. Was this made before 2000?
Before January 1st, 2000.
Yeah. January 2nd.
Oh, I'm sorry. No.
January 2nd.
The answer is no.
Okay.
It's a modern-ish game. Was it before January 1st, January 2nd, 2010?
Yes.
Before.
Okay. So in that 10-year window, which is odd, there were not many games where you had hands and could speak in those days.
Yeah, good work, guys. That's a really good point.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go with Mario Kart.
Do you want to maybe ask about feet or like other sounds?
Oh,
like,
I think we okay. Now, you guys can ask whatever you want. I'm not going to influence your questions.
Brian's up.
Oh, it's me?
It's a 2000s game.
Hmm. Is this a console exclusive game? Or is this game exclusive to one console?
No.
Oh, it's multi-platform.
Is this of the PlayStation 2 generation?
Yes.
So it's GameCube, PS2, you always have to get OG Xbox. Mm. Was this game made in Japan?
Yes.
Ooh. So GameCube, PS2, Xbox era.
Multi-platform game.
Multi-platform Japanese game where you can talk and see your hands.
Ape Escape. No, that was exclusive.
That was exclusive. Don't say gosh.
Was this game on GameCube?
Yes.
All right. Because that was a much smaller library than the other two, so the Venn diagram.
Oh, that's true.
That's pretty good.
Japanese GameCube games.
I'm thinking Beautiful Joe.
Because Damon did hesitate when
Henshin a go-go, baby.
Because that's why...
Agreed speaking.
That's it. Okay, well, was this game made by Capcom?
Yes.
Did you do it?
I don't think so.
Did Justin give this game a 10 out of 10?
You guys got to remember, Capcom had the games on GameCube.
Yes, of which 5. One was canceled, one remained exclusive.
None of them did.
What about PNO 3?
Oh, you're right.
PNO 3 was GameCube exclusive.
Resident Evil, sorry.
Okay, so they made Billy Hatcher. No, that was Sega, which that was a GameCube exclusive.
It was PNO 3, yeah. Beautiful Joe, yeah. And Killer Resident 7. Evil, and yeah. Killer 7, and then the fifth one didn't come out.
Killer 7 went to PS...
I got this. Is this one of the Capcom 5?
Yes. That's 10.
Oh, my God.
Does your character say Hinch and a Go-Go, baby?
I probably can't answer that one.
What? Well,
can
I mean,
I play Beautiful Joe.
It's been a minute.
Okay,
this is Beautiful Joe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
There you go. Good. It's Beautiful Joe. Right?
Let's do another one.
You know when you beat when you beat Resident Evil Remake, they go Henshin a Go Go, baby.
I can't answer.
I don't remember that that line, but yeah.
I gave this was way before IGN. Obviously, I gave that game a 10 out of 10, and my editor.
Wow.
My editor, like, it was a joke for, like, years.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, and I stood by it.
Game rules, man.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, is it another Beautiful Joe? I'm like, screw you, man.
Yeah,
that
game's
awesome.
Dope. Seriously, it's not like you get PNO 3 a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, that was 2003. Beautiful Joe. It was
it really that long ago?
Yeah, 2003. A GameCube timed exclusive.
2003. That was the first year. That must have been one of the very first games I ever reviewed, because that was the first year I got paid to write about.
That's why you got shit. It was like, you can't come out the gate with a 10 like that, man. Come on.
They're probably honest.
I'll work up to that.
You knock a rocket. That game is so good.
Man. Yeah. Your girlfriend's name's Sylvia. She has glasses.
Okay. They made a few more, and then it went away.
They made one more, didn't they?
They made Beautiful Joe 2, and then they made Beautiful Joe Dual Strike or DS or whatever DS, it was.
Yeah.
I forget the name of it. But it was the first DS game that had 3D on both screens.
Man, what an underrated game franchise, because it would use, so it had, I mean, Damon, if you didn't play it, you would
I did play it. Okay. I had the original.
Like the
I haven't played it since then, since 2003.
What was so brilliant about it is using the speed up, the speed time up and slow time down, both for combat and for puzzles.
Yeah.
And sometimes doing
platforming and
Yeah. So it's like you would use it to like traverse the environment and figure out how, but then also zip back and forth between fast time and slow time.
Remember what game that came out at the exact same time as?
No.
I traded this game in for it after I love Beautiful Joe, and then I beat it and I traded it in for Prince of Persia: Sands of Time.
Ooh. Oh, you're all about that rewind that year. Yeah.
Yeah, the rewind was the same.
What a good year.
Yeah. It's cool. For GameCube especially, which was a tough system to own alone, which is the only one I had.
It was the only one I had for a long time.
Yeah.
Well.
Well, as Omega Cops say.
Yep.
As cop, me go.
That's right. The famous sign-off for GameScoop. As cop, me go.
Send your letters to ascopmego.com or campgoose.net.
Yep.
That is all the scoops we have for this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Sam.
Hey, coo, peg, MS.
My name is Damon, and as cop, me go.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.